This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues. Tan Chung Han and myself, Sharad Kutin, with the top business stories of the day. And we start with a startling headline, Han. Toshiba warns it may be unable to stay in business. And quite a brand there for a lot of Malaysians. I think we think of Toshiba as one of those solid brands. But apparently Toshiba Corp has expressed doubts for the first time that it can survive in the light of huge losses at its US nuclear subsidiary, which has filed for bankruptcy last month. The company issued a warning alongside its latest earnings report, which came 2 months late, having missed two deadlines and without the approval of its auditor.
All right, so Toshiba, very much a household name, right? Well, certainly here in Malaysia. It is 142 years old. Well, it lived to see its 143rd birthday.
That's right. So it's a household name for the appliances, not for nuclear energy.
Well, I mean, if you go to their website right now, they are pretty much a what they call a business-to-business solution. So, yes, they've got stakes in everything from, you know, memory making, memory chip. They make memory chips, and all the way to nuclear as well. So now we have been following this story for quite a while here on this show now. So this is pretty startling. So yesterday evening, Malaysian time, the CEO of Toshiba, you know, Satoshi Sunakawa, he held a press conference and basically saying that there are many options that they're looking at to essentially try to make Toshiba stay alive. So it's not just the turmoils in the U.S. nuclear unit, which has been bleeding cash there, but at the same time, according to the Telegraph, and this is pretty breaking news, it just came out earlier this morning, our time, the Telegraph reports that Toshiba is even looking to sell a stake in its U.K. nuclear project as well. So, you know, a lot of troubles. And of course, yesterday we spoke about that possible sale of its unit, of its memory chip making unit, and looks like Foxconn might be the front runner for that. For that stake.
Okay, so the name that actually comes to mind when I was thinking of this is this particular story is the subsidiary that was at the heart of the story, which is the Westinghouse Electric Company, and because that name appeared during the Xi Jinping Donald Trump meet, because it was a story that was kind of circulating around that meeting because the possibility of Chinese interest buying a stake in or buying up Westinghouse Electric Company, and the fact that the news was coming out that the White House was looking quite seriously at finding an American stakeholder to take over Westinghouse rather than allow for China to move in and take this valuable piece of real estate, especially in terms of the information and knowledge around nuclear technologies.
Right, you know, and so that theme is also seen in Toshiba's possible sale of its memory chip business, to possibly that Taiwanese company, Foxconn, right? Because, again, many people see that part of Toshiba as being a strategic asset. You know, you've got even Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's name being bandied about. So are they willing to let go of these, Japanese with their proud identities, you know, this is Japanese, but are you willing to let that go for dollars? I mean, you've got some Bloomberg commentary already saying that, you cannot fight against Terry Goh. You know, that's the chairman of Foxconn. That he's got the purse strings. You know, he's got the dollars. And when he dangles that in front of you, really, how much is your, so-called national interest worth? It depends on how you define it, right?
Right. So the offer was pretty high, right? Much higher than other offers that had come in. So the question I think that you posed yesterday was, how could they resist this offer? I mean, how would they justify it to their shareholders?
And in fact, what Foxconn has actually done is they've actually lowered their bid. So initially, their bid was about $27 billion US dollars. And then when they saw that the next closest bidder was only about 16, so they said, you know what, fine, we'll go back down. So they've actually lowered it down to about $17 billion US dollars. So it's still above the second highest bid. You know, so the question now is, how long can Toshiba hold off? You know, it's not just in terms of selling off its it's a memory chip business, but it's also how long can they survive as a conglomerate, because there's also talk about them possibly being delisted from the Tokyo Stock Exchange. I mean, this is a public listed company, right? And they have to adhere to very, very strict rules in terms of their publishing their earnings. And now that you've got PricewaterhouseCoopers who are refusing to sign off on their latest quarterly earnings, yet the CEO has gone out to the public and say, here's our numbers, we are confident about it, but the auditors haven't signed off on it, it seems to make a mockery of the TSE's, the Tokyo Stock Exchange's rules.
Okay, so how important or significant is this missing of deadlines? Does it suggest that some improper accounting going on? I mean, what exactly is the significance for a company when it does these things?
Well, perhaps to make it relatable to Malaysians. You know, we saw the same thing with 1MDB, right? You know, when they were unable to basically publish their annual reports or their annual accounts, it makes you wonder, well, what's going on? Because, you know, if you are a corporation that's responsible, you would have these reports out there in a timely fashion, and, you know, the auditors are able to sign off on it, right?
So this is a public relations issue?
Well, no, I mean, it's regulatory. Like, so the Tokyo Stock Exchange and all these different Japanese regulators actually demand that you meet these deadlines. The fact that they've missed two deadlines, not just once, but twice, right? You know, so it really makes you question really what is going on with their books. On top of that, you see that over $9 billion US dollars that they lost with Westinghouse, possibly even selling off their stakes in other businesses. So it really makes you wonder, is this the end of the, you know, 142-year-old conglomerate?
Wow. Toshiba there, a brand that we perhaps might have to say goodbye to. Mm-hmm. Now, moving on, Saudi Arabia wants OPEC to extend production cuts. Saudi Arabia told OPEC officials that it wants to extend the cartel's agreement to cut crude oil production for another 6 months when the group meets in May. Saudi support is essential for the 13-member Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC, to renew its agreement at the next meeting in Vienna on May the 25th.
Now, this is news because if you go back to January of this year, you've got headlines whereby Saudi Arabia says, no, we do not see a need for this deal to be extended. They expect that rebalancing to happen by June. But then when you see what oil prices have happened and Brent futures, just as recent as about 3 weeks ago, you know, hovering very closely above that $50 a barrel mark. You know, the questions, you know, started to come up. You know, has the market really rebalanced, especially when you consider what has happened with the U.S. shale oil? So now this is quite the 180 by Saudi Arabia. Again, this is according to the Wall Street Journal's report, you know, saying that they are signaling perhaps that this deal has to be extended beyond that June deadline. And we have seen how oil prices have recovered or rebounded quite significantly just over the last 2-3 weeks. Oil prices, last I checked right before the show, it was about above $56 a barrel. So it's gained about $6 in just a span of 2-3 weeks. But whether, you know, I mean, it can be a double-edged sword. You know, do you interpret that as perhaps, you know, the market rebalancing itself? You know, or, yeah, no, we just have to wait and see what happens.
Well, what does the report say about the kind of support this call has, the call has come out for? I mean, is there broad support for the extension of the cuts?
Well, I mean, look, even as recent as February, you had other OPEC members, you know, murmuring about perhaps we need to extend this, you know, perhaps that 6 month time frame is not enough. So now that, well, we will find out more definitively, in a more definite fashion, if, when that May 25th meeting happens with OPEC.
What about the non OPEC members that also helped out with the cutting of oil production? I'm thinking of Russia and Iran.
Yeah. Even Malaysia as well, and Petronas has also gone on this voluntary reduction of output. But at the same time, is it enough? You know, apparently not. If you are, again, if these reports are to be true, that Saudi Arabia is asking OPEC to, they're proposing that the deadline be pushed back even further.
Okay, speaking of workers' welfare, Starbucks extends China health coverage to workers' parents. So now, if you're working in a Starbucks in China, so correct me if I'm wrong, that's the story. If you're working in a Starbucks in China, not only are you covered, but so are your parents. So is that, you know, is that standard practice? Yeah, of course it's a plus point, but is that standard practice, and why are they doing it?
Well, so according to Starbucks CEO, you know, Howard Schultz, you know, he's saying that this is in line with Chinese culture, right? Taking care of their parents. So this is the first time that Starbucks themselves are doing this, and up to 10,000 people, I assume that's 10,000 employees that they have for Starbucks China. 10,000 people could stand to benefit here, or at least their parents. And it's pretty all-encompassing. You've got conditions like, you know, cancer, heart disease, even Alzheimer's. They're all apparently covered within this new policy.
Okay, so one of the pressures we understand that's happening in China, rather prematurely in its, you know, very solid economic development, is the problem of aging population. We understand that this is going to be a real challenge, a real headwind for economic development in China. Does that play any role in this decision?
Oh, well, certainly. But at the same time, with that economic development, unfortunately, when you look at Chinese society, those social safety nets, they apparently are not in place, at least not strong enough, whereby it has prompted Starbucks to then step in and introduce this kind of policy. Now, granted, I'm sure, given the fact that we are talking about it, I'm sure Starbucks is gaining a whole bunch of PR points right now, but it does meet a very real need.
I mean, it's ironic considering that China is run by the Communist Party of China, which ought to have workers' interests at the heart of its agenda.
Well, I mean, okay, to be fair, China has an existing program. It's called the China Social Medical Insurance Program. So Starbucks, what they say is that this complements the existing program, but essentially the existing program isn't exactly strong enough. So Starbucks is then stepping in, again, covering some really critical illnesses, like cancer, Alzheimer's, etc. And families are then given a lump sum, and they could even receive subsidies for treatments up to 3 years, I think. Yeah.
Well, it's extraordinary. China's a huge population, 1.4 billion people. I believe the government does provide healthcare for up to 95% of its 1.5 billion people. Huge. I mean, when I talk about China, we're talking about scale. Always the scale is extraordinary. We'll be back with more business news after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.